welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night. We thank you for joining us. Again, please join us in our live chat room. You can go to darknessradio.com, click on the live chat link, and join us so that you can talk along with other like-minded individuals. You can also direct questions to our guests. See Tim in the room. You can just PM him, private message him any questions, and we can try to put him on the air. So keep that in mind, and we'd love to have you interact with us in future shows as well. And make sure to remember, tomorrow night, we have the real Ghost Whisperer joining us, Marianne Winkowski. She is one of the creative consultants for the TV show Ghost Whisperer on CBS. She is one of the inspirations for the character of Melinda Gordon on the TV show as well. You're going to want to be here for that. We've got some people are going to be calling in and finding out if their houses truly are haunted, Tim. And this is what I think our fourth or fifth visitation with Marianne Winkowski.
Fourth. Yep.
And for those of you interested, check out our website, MarianneWinkowski.com. That's WinkowSki. Again, MarianneWinkowski.com. And I do want to thank again our corporate sponsor, Bill Chappell with Digital Dowsing. He has got some of the most impressive paranormal equipment right now. So check out his website at digitaldowsing.com, and you'll see some of the coolest new technology and ghost hunting equipment that's available on the marketplace. Tim, we're going to be delving into the world of UFOs here as we tickled in the first hour.
And we've tickled the UFO in the first hour?
We've been there. I've got Preston Dennett we're going to be talking to in a few seconds here. And Preston's an interesting guy. He's been investigating UFOs now in the paranormal since 1986. When he discovered that his family, his friends, and his coworkers were having these dramatic, kind of unexplained encounters. Since then, he's interviewed hundreds of witnesses investigating a wide variety of different paranormal phenomena. He's the author of, check this out, 13 books and more than 100 articles on UFOs and the paranormal. And you can read his articles. They've been everything from Fate Magazine, Atlantis Rising, MUFON, UFO Journal, Paranormal Magazine, UFO Magazine, Ufologist, and others. We've got author Preston Dennett with us. And aside from being an author, you're also an actual UFO researcher with MUFON, and you're a paranormal investigator, correct?
That's correct.
I'm curious, with the research that you've done here, have you found that in certain areas where UFOs are highly sighted, that there's more Bigfoot and paranormal ghost-like activity that takes place?
I'd say to a certain extent, that's true, but, you know, it's hard to tell because a lot of this depends on the witnesses. It seems to me the witnesses of UFOs themselves report a lot of that type of activity, because you can have people living in the center of a UFO hotspot who have never seen anything. I don't know, so it's curious, but I'm going to say that yes.
What we found is with UFO or with paranormal activity, it seems like it's a geometric, is that right, geometric, Tim? Is that the word I'm looking for here? It's the ground that can help influence paranormal activity to be stronger. If it's a high level of quartz or iron.
The stronger the magnetic field, the more the paranormal activity. Yeah.
I would think that that might be a better suited area for UFOs as well, because if there is a higher level of electromagnetic fields, it's probably easier for them to cloak themselves,
you know,
or blend in.
Right. That's an entire possibility, and there's some evidence of that. I mean, Sedona is an area that's well known for a high UFO activity, and it also supposedly has a vortex of some kind. Now,
explain for our listeners, what is a vortex?
An area where there's a great deal of electromagnetic activity coming from the Earth itself. Huge magnetic lines, I guess. But I'm not
sure. Do they feel that's kind of a portal between dimensions?
Yeah, supposedly. I'm not entirely clear what a vortex is, because people have different definitions.
Okay.
But supposedly Gulf Breeze has a vortex. Topanga Canyon, a bunch of people have told me, this area has a vortex, which is also a very big hot spot for UFOs. So, you know, I don't know, but there could be a connection there.
Now, do you want people to contact you as well, Preston, with their personal stories of paranormal and UFO activity?
Oh, absolutely.
And how can they go about reaching you?
You can contact me through my website, actually. My email is on there, which my email is Prestone. It's my first name with an E on the end, at pacbell.net.
Oh, I'm sorry, I've been calling you Preston. Is it Prestone?
No, it's Preston.
Oh, okay. You're just toying with me? See how you are. All right, so it's Prestone?
Yeah.
At?
Pacbell.net.
Pacbell.net.
Now, have you been sued by Prestone for your email address?
Use of the name?
Not yet.
Well, let's talk, we're kind of tantalizing people with these stories, and I'm interested in this, the UFO phenomena that happens with healings.
Right.
What's involved with that? Now, you said that this one lady had a cancerous tumor, and she was scheduled to go in for surgery. She went in after having the experience. The next day, it was gone, and it appeared that there was some kind of high-tech surgery done on this woman.
Right. I have another case just like that. A lady had a tumor in her breast, and I went to the doctor, and they couldn't find it. And the MRI showed that she had had some type of surgery. And the doctor came in, and he actually pointed to a laser scar on her body. And she denied having had surgery because she hadn't, not that she recalled.
So have these people that you get these stories from, have they gone through any kind of regression therapy, hypnoregression, to see if, you know, they have those memories? And then what I'm curious about is these people that seem to have things removed from them, could it be that they were implanted in them to begin with, and it isn't so much a healing, but it's a, you know, the aliens have planted there, it's metastasized now, it's grown, and they're coming back to harvest it?
And that's entirely possible, but if you look at the full spectrum of...
Did you hear the way he said that to me? He's like, you are high. Well, that's possible. I'm just curious. I mean, it seems strange. Why would they come? Now, I understand when they come and they take... you know, lips and anuses from cows. Boy, that's just tasty fiddles right there. But
that's hot dogs.
Yeah, but yeah. But why boils and lumps, you know, cancerous growths? That just seems to be strange to me.
Well, I mean, there's over 100 cases of healings, at least when I first surveyed it. Now there's closer to 200. And if you look at the full spectrum of cases, it's clear that these are healings and not just them taking out implants, because people are being cured of a very wide variety of illnesses and conditions, and everything from colds to cancer, flesh wounds, you name it, that there's a case out there of someone claiming at least to have been cured. And what's, I think, amazing about these cases is this represents some of our best medical evidence out there. Medical evidence, I think, is among the best evidence that we have for UFOs, other than the UFO itself, which, you know, I think we do have as well, but we're, you know, the average citizen can't get their hands on it.
Speculate for us, if you will, why these particular people are being healed and not others.
You know, that was something that a lot of people asked me, and I did a survey on it, and it was very hard to tell. You know,
survey says top 10 answers on the board.
About 35% of the people who were healed were having prior experiences, you know, or a larger percentage. So a lot of the people who are having these cures were already being contacted. But there's a good percentage of people who had never had a UFO encounter before or since, who had a healing case.
Well, see, that was my point. If they have been visited in the past by UFOs or aliens, to me it only sounds like, you know, that they're putting something in, and before the you know, our government or our doctors can pull this thing out, ooh, crap, get X-47 down there and remove that lump, because they're gonna take it out and realize what we're doing here. You know, I mean, to me that just sounds like a more plausible.
I could get even more out there for you if you'd like.
Oh, and please, Tim, this is a paranormal show. Let's do this.
If I were going to speculate, I would say that the reason these particular people are being healed are maybe because these people are more likely to go spread the word that these UFOs or these aliens exist and are messengers. Therefore, they need to be kept alive or kept healthy to keep spreading the word.
But then why wouldn't they leave them with the message or the memory that it happened?
They do, actually, and I think that there is a slight pattern that does show itself in that direction, because there's a lot of inventors who have been healed, a lot of social workers, police officers. There does seem to be a slightly higher percentage of that type of person.
Well, we know that there's different races, or we've been told there are different races or alien breeds. There's reptilians, there's the Greys, the Nordics, all these different types. Have you found with the healings, has there been any specific, you know, the Greys seem to kind of be the bad guys of the universe, the testers and the scientists and the nasty guys. Then there's like the healers, it seems like the Nordics and the reptilians seem to be kind of on the dark side too. Is there any correlation between what type of races are doing more of the healing?
No, it was at least 50% done by the Greys. You know, in some cases people didn't see the ETs, they were just beamed by a UFO. But there's no cases of reptilians healing. There was some of human type of aliens, but no real strong pattern either way, so, which was, you know, frustrating, but that's the way it is.
Now, do many of the people have a memory of what type of aliens worked with them?
Well, you know, certainly, absolutely. You know, What's really interesting, I think, is that there are so many different types of ETs. I mean, we talk about grays, but yet there are very, very few cases of where different people report seeing the same actual gray ET. You know, and sometimes they'll actually name themselves. And so what we have is a situation where it looks like all these different people across, you know, the United States and the world are being contacted by different aliens, you know, at least individuals.
Okay.
So it's hard to tell how many different races that we're even dealing with, because the grays come in all sorts of different forms. They come down to 3 feet tall, all the way up to 5 feet tall, and, you know, even more. And then there's hybrids as well. So it's gotten to be a very complex situation.
Well, let's hear. We've got about a minute and a half here before our first break. Tell me about another one of the healings that took place that you cover in your book.
All right. Well, here's a good case, which happened to two police officers. Deputy Good was one of the names of one of them, and this was in Damon, Texas, and they had been called out to actually a UFO sighting, and when they got there, this UFO was there. They saw it. It was hovering up in the sky, sending down purple beams of light, and at one point, a beam of light actually struck their cruiser, and Deputy Good, he had his arm hanging out of the window, and he says he could actually feel this light when it hit him. It was kind of warm and tingling. Earlier that day, he had been bitten by his son's baby pet alligator on his finger, and it left this wound, you know, which was swollen, of course, and painful, and he had it bandaged up. And so this beam of light strikes his hand exactly where this wound is, and he doesn't think much of it at first. They race away from the scene in terror, you know, pretty frightened by this thing.
Sure.
Pull into a diner and start to discuss what they've seen. When he notices his finger isn't hurting, he takes off the bandage and there's no cut there. It's completely healed, and there's a number of cases like that. So these beams of light that ETs have some ability to repair cellular matter.
Now, you have this book available on your site as well, correct?
That's correct.
And the name of the book again?
UFO Healings, True Accounts of People Healed by Extraterrestrials. Over 100 cases.
And you can get that book and more by going to PrestonDennett.com. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thank you for joining us here and spending your Saturday night. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Check out our website at DarknessRadio.com for upcoming events, upcoming guests, all the cool information. That way you can also contact Tim and Dave there by reaching us at dave@darknessradio.com or tim@darknessradio.com. If you have questions or guest ideas, suggestions, there's buttons and links. Also, you can contact our international and our national news correspondents there by clicking the news desk icon on the left side of the screen. You can pass on any news stories to Adrian or Bill and let them know about things that might be going on in and around your area. Again, if you have international stories, send them over to Adrian. If you have national stories, pass them on to Bill Murphy. We also have links to our guests that are available on our site so that you can find our guests, like tonight's guest, Preston Dennett, who is an author, a MUFON investigator with the Mutual UFO Network. He's also a paranormal investigator and author of over 13 books. And tonight we've been talking about his brand new book, UFOs Over New York, which is currently available. We've also talked about his UFO healing book we were just discussing. And Preston, let's talk, just give me a couple more case sites that you were most impressed by. And now, did you get to personally interview these people that had these healings, or were these stories passed, you know, I have a friend of a friend who had this happen?
I would say the majority of them I got from the UFO literature itself, books, magazines, you know, radio shows, other investigators. I was able to interview, I would say, 5%, you know, about 10 cases I was able to, you know, either investigate myself or interview the witnesses involved.
Okay.
So,
Well, what do you think? Give me two more of your most impactful cases that you were able to come across in your research.
All right. Well, here's a case that was actually investigated by John Carpenter, which I thought was particularly impressive, which involved a 21-year-old.
Now, are we talking about director, writer John Carpenter?
No, this is an abduction investigator from
the
Midwest.
Okay. All right. Just double checking.
And he was working with a client who actually suffered from color blindness. And he had had it all his life. And he started having contact. And during one of his onboard experiences, his eyeball was removed by the ETs. And this is a procedure that has occurred to many different people, actually.
Really? Having their eyeballs removed?
Yes. It's bizarre. Okay. Actually, I wrote an article about it recently because I found so many cases. It kind of freaked me out. You know, these ETs are incredible doctors. They're much better doctors than we are. And we actually do remove people's eyeballs for surgery such as, you know, detached retina.
Right.
And things like that. So it's possible to do. Just these ETs seem to do it a lot, to implant people. And that's what they were doing with this guy, but it turns out that he was also, they told him they were fixing his vision. And the side benefit of this apparent implant operation was his color blindness was cured all the way up to where he was only colorblind for green.
Really? So they were able to adjust it to adjust the degree of the level of loss that he had before so that he was more capable of seeing colors.
Right. And his eye doctor was able to confirm this. So it's kind of an interesting case. And there's a lot of cases of people who have had their vision, you know, improved.
You know, we have our international correspondent happens to still be here with us this week in the studio, Adrian Lee from England. And Adrian, you had a quick question for Preston?
Yeah, I was just interested. Has anyone ever done any research, medical research? We spoke last week on the show about reverse engineering, where it's alleged that NASA has found or has reverse engineered anti-gravity propulsion units. Has anyone in the medical field actually looked at these people and sort of tried to, in a sense, look at the procedures and what's actually taking place?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think that's what the major benefits of this kind of study is, because it shows that there's a lot of illnesses that we label chronic, which aren't really chronic because the ETs are curing them. And I think the best benefit that medical science is getting out of this type of research is how useful light is. And there are a lot of cases now where we're using the same sort of techniques that we see on board UFOs, in particular, you know, like using this laser beam type of thing to destroy tumors in the body, so it's not an invasive surgery,
mm-hmm.
and using phototherapy to get rid of hepatitis and things like this. And we're actually now, when someone breaks a bone, we can stimulate it electrically. And these are all sort of things that come straight out of the UFO accounts, which match up a lot to medical science, but they're just way more advanced than us.
Have you heard, I'm just curious with this, there's a moonlight therapy. Have you heard of this used for some healings now?
Moonlight? No, I haven't.
Yeah, they use like an array to reflect, I guess, moonlight at you to help you heal. You know, kind of like you use a mirror to tip sunlight and, you know, for power. You're able to tip the light, you tip the mirror so that the moonlight cascades you and does the same thing. And I was wondering if you had any information on that, if it might have some kind of UFO connection as well.
No, I haven't really heard of that, so I can't speak to that.
Okay.
But I do know that these ETs, again, the power of they have over the electromagnetic spectrum is amazing. These lights can levitate people. They can render solid objects transparent or so that you could actually walk through solid objects like walls. They heal. They can actually transmit information. People have been struck by these beams of light and had sort of telepathic conversations go on. So it's amazing the things that they can do with these beams of light. And I think lasers, you know, there's a lot of speculation that some of our technology has been reverse engineered from UFOs, and lasers are right up there.
Well, right. When you look at, you know, it was, what, only 120 years ago that the Wright brothers made their first flight.
Right.
And we go from that to, you know, 50 years later, we're on the moon. The abilities that we seem to have gotten, I mean, have grown not in incremental bits, but like in huge leaps and bounds, the technology. And I mean, we have shuttles and space probes that are out circling Jupiter and other planets. I mean, this is pretty impressive. It does seem like we've picked up a lot of technology in a very short period of time.
It certainly does.
With the research that you've done as well, what do you find or what do you believe is probably the most sincere proof that we are reverse engineering, you know, alien craft? I mean, is there anything that you see from the, you know, everything from, what was the name of that big ship, Tim, the big cloaked one that came out for a long time? It looks like the Batwing flying over. What's that called?
The SR-71.
Stealth bomber. Yeah, stealth bomber, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that one everybody was pretty sure was definitely reverse engineered from the look of it. Kind of looks like a lot of the triangle UFOs. But is there something that sticks out in your mind particularly that you think, you know, this is this is some pretty solid proof, Dave, that we're definitely working with, you know, UFO technology.
I wish I could say it, but I would only be speculating. Computers, I think the whole integrated circuit supposedly came from the fiber optics. And, you know, Kevlar, this was supposedly came from the Roswell UFO crash, according to Colonel Corso, which I thought was particularly interesting because a lot of UFO witnesses have described the metal on UFOs as being like Kevlar, sort of a non-reflective, weird textured metal. So I thought that was a curious coincidence, at least.
And Kevlar, that's used in bulletproof jackets and protective
right.
gear, correct?
Night vision, that's another thing, which, you know, is pretty convincing. I would say, the whole UFO phenomenon is a lot more pervasive in society than people realize. It's affected us really deeply in lots of different ways, and technology is a major one of them.
Right. Well, I mean, it's obvious with all the work that we're able to do now, with all the insane, like I said, just the leaps that we've made in technology over the last even 50 years is unbelievable, that one little thing gets unlocked and suddenly we've got all of these brand new technologies that we're able to do.
Right. And I have no doubt we do have them. I just interviewed a lady who worked at China Air Force Base, and she says she was out there with a bunch of these soldiers who were using a laser. They were testing it out, which they had recovered from a UFO. And she watched them fire it, and it was able to lit. They were lifting heavy abandoned tanks out there in the desert, up and down, and kind of throwing them around with this laser. And you could adjust it so it would do different things. It would blow things up, you know, levitate things. They were going to shoot it at some mules, and she got really upset and wouldn't let them do it. And they got into kind of an argument about it. So we do have
leave it to good old American ingenuity to, hey, let's blow up a mule. We got us some UFO technology. Well, you alluded to earlier that you think that they're listening to us. So hopefully if they are listening to us, Tim, maybe we can put in a request that the aliens abduct us and heal us and make us have full heads of hair again.
I like that.
You think that's asking too much?
And I'd like something else, too, but I can't say it on here.
Oh, God. Yeah. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest, Preston Dennett. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening is Preston Dennett. And we've been discussing all facets of UFO information that he's been able to glean in his research. And, you know, you alluded to, or not alluded to, but you mentioned the Roswell crash. I'm just curious, you know, we've heard so much about the Roswell crash. You know, and I believe there was also one that happened in Canada that they refer to as the Canadian Roswell.
Nova Scotia, right.
Right. How often do UFOs crash? And is there proof that there are more crashes than we've been alerted to in the past?
Proof? Yes, there is. But can you get a hold of it? Not so easily.
Okay.
There are way, way more many than Roswell. Roswell's the case that will not die. It's the case that's going to break open the cover-up eventually. But it's not the only one. There's many, many cases. There's a very famous one in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. They're all over the place. And you know,
what happened with that one? Can you give us a little background?
That was in 1965, the year I was born, and it involved this acorn-shaped object. At first, they thought it was a meteor. It was seen across several states, but this meteor slowed down, it turned, and then it dropped down into the forest outside of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And it was seen by numerous of the residents there. The fire people showed up, military people showed up. There's lots of witnesses now who have been interviewed. Some got very close to this craft and said that it had markings on it, like hieroglyphics. It was 10, 15 feet tall, about 10 feet wide, circular, shaped like an acorn, and was bright polished metal. And a couple of people said that they actually saw some sort of ETs in there. A lot of people saw a truck driving out of town covered with a tarpaulin. Lots of people saw the military cordoning off this area. Lots of people saw the fire that was caused by this object when it crashed. So there's a lot of evidence to it. It's a huge, huge deal in this town, and one of the best cases, actually, of a UFO crash in the United States. So, you know, I think it's second to Roswell.
I'm wondering, have you ever gotten any reports from people that have supposedly been at the crash sites that have come away with burns or radiation burns, anything along those lines?
There are a lot of cases like that in the UFO literature where people have gotten too close to not a crashed UFO necessarily, but one that's landing or taking off. But the information surrounding crashed UFOs has been very much suppressed. So it comes piecemeal from witnesses who are very frightened, who won't give their first names or last names. And so it's very, very hard to get information about it. I mean, Roswell, they've interviewed 600 witnesses. We know everything about Roswell, who guarded the craft, who saw it come down, who picked up the wreckage, who autopsied the bodies. We've interviewed pretty much everyone involved in that. But all the others, we only get one or two witnesses of the incident. So you have to sort of piece it together. But it's occurring all across the United States in pretty much every state. I'm not going to say every state, but so far that I've been doing my research. I mean, New York has 2-3 crashes in it. California has a number of crash retrieval incidents in it. Arizona does. New Mexico has about a dozen at last count,
wow,
at least.
Adrian, you have our international correspondent, as I said, Adrian is here. Adrian, you had a point you wanted to make?
Yeah, early in the show, we mentioned the fact that recently the British government has actually been more overt in actually publishing its files for the Ministry of Defense. And they've actually put those online, and there was an incident talking about Roswell in different countries. There's an incident called the British Roswell, which took place at Rendlesham Forest, and it was actually an American Air Force base, and those files are now available to look at, where the United States actually had police offices in that area, and there was alleged a downed actual UFO aircraft, and that's actually now been placed online by the British government.
Right. There's like 10 books published on this case, which probably would never have been revealed if it weren't for those two first ladies. They were Dot Street and Brenda Butler, some reporters who pursued this case. And finally, you know, they got some information, and it just snowballed from there, and it's become, I think, you know, England's biggest case out there. So, and we're still discovering things about it. I mean, Colonel Halt, he stepped forward and said, yes, all of this happened, and apparently it was filmed. So there's evidence that's being suppressed still that we have not gotten a hold of.
You know, so many people, the main question, I'm sure you get this a lot, is, well, why don't they just land on the White House lawn if they're out there? Well, technically they did. Wasn't it in the 50s that there's famous photographs that actually appeared on the cover of Life magazine of UFOs over
The Capitol.
The Capitol.
Right. Yeah. Happened twice, 52 and I think 54. And they practically did land and probably would have if we hadn't reacted the way we did, which was to ground all our commercial aircraft and send up all our military jets and pursue them and try and shoot at them. But they were captured on radar. They were...
So how can the government continue to deny that this is occurring when, I mean, it was covered on the cover of Life. That's not the National Enquirer or the People World Weekly or what do you have out in England there, Adrian? What's your horrible rag mag? Is it the Sun?
Yeah, we have several. There's the Sun, the Mirror, the Star. I mean, you can take your pick, really.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like it was some crappy rag mag that was reporting this. It was the cover of Life showing right. These UFOs over this. Why don't you think there's been more disclosure? I mean, Adrian just mentioned the British defense system is sharing it. France came out. They're sharing. Russia shared UFO stuff they've released to the public. Canada has done the same thing. Why are we holding out?
Because we have the technology. We have the crashed UFOs. And the people who are in control of
it. So what? Then I would think that that's when America steps up and they said, hey, you know what? We got it. Don't worry. This is why you should feel safer about being in America. Because if any of these other pups step up, we can, you know, dispatch them quickly. We have UFO technology. America would feel a lot better and a lot safer, especially in these moments like right now with, you know, the issues that have happened in Korea and China rising to power and the war that's going on over in Afghanistan and Iraq. You
right.
know, people are worried about how it's going to affect us here. But if we had it, I think we'd, I don't know, Tim, wouldn't you feel that we'd feel a little bit more secure knowing we have advanced technologies these other countries don't?
I'd take the opposite view.
You'd be worried that they're going to use them against us?
I would worry that if the rest of the world knew that the U.S. held UFO technology, that everybody and their mother would be out trying to shoot down a UFO to get that same technology or try to assimilate it, much like an atomic or a nuclear weapon.
You know, I just sitting here thinking about this, talking about the government and the way they've adapted these things. I think technically the IRS may be aliens because I've been probed by them a few times.
Well, just imagine this. I mean, this is the situation, I think. We're sitting on basically free energy machines. We have these machines which would totally transform our society. But we're an oil-based economy. And the people who are in power, you know, is this military-industrial complex. The generals, these are not elected people. The non-elected government is the ones who are sitting on this technology.
Well, I think it's time that we release the energy and show this, because I'll tell you, there's something that's more precious than oil. It's printer ink. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but for 3 ounces of printer ink cost me $25, and people are whining that they got to pay $3 for a gallon of gas. I think we're getting off a lot worse with that.
It's actually a lot cheaper in Britain to actually buy a new printer with the ink in it than actually buy the printing cartridge.
Yeah, I've done that myself a couple of times when I've run out of it. I just go out and buy a new printer. That's the wasteful Americans we are. Well, it's because we have UFO technology here, so we can just waste not.
There is, to a certain extent, has been a sort of release of the cover-up. I mean, this technology that is being released into society supposedly did come from crashed UFOs, so we are benefiting from it. And I think right now we're in a situation where the government is going to have to tell what they know about UFOs if they want to remain in control, because things have escalated to such a point where pretty much everyone knows what UFOs are. The majority of people believe in them. UFO activity seems to be escalating. One of these days, the UFOs are going to show up, and they're just not going to go away. And then how are we going to react?
Go ahead, Adrian. You had a point?
Yeah, would it be fair to say that perhaps in Europe it's more overt? I'm suspecting that if the British government actually releases these files, do you think it's a case that people would actually stop looking? The fact that they've released stuff and it's just people's accounts, small sketches with biros, drawings, do you think it's a case that, you know, if they actually release some, it takes the sort of suspicion away, or it stops people from digging further?
Perhaps to a certain extent. I think that there's still stuff that's going to be classified, obviously. We're not, just because they're releasing files doesn't mean they're releasing everything that they have. And a lot of governments are releasing all sorts of stuff. I mean, the United States does have a cover-up, but they did release the Blue Book files.
Yeah, but 90% of it is blacked out.
Well, no, not the Air Force Blue Book files weren't. A lot of the other government's documents, like from the NSA, are blacked out, and a lot from Air Force bases and things like this. And there is still a cover-up, but it seems to me are steps being taken to sort of reduce the level of this cover-up and inform people. When are we going to see the Roswell UFO craft in a museum? I think it could possibly be within our lifetime, but it's not going to happen tomorrow.
But how do they go back after years, 50 years of saying it didn't happen, and go, okay, we were just kidding you? That's where I think that we're going to run into more problems with the government, because, like, it's exactly. If you're going to lie to us about that, what else are you going to lie to us about?
Exactly. But, you know, sooner or later the truth comes out. There's going to be another UFO crash. There's going to be another major UFO wave. People are going to get the evidence, no matter what the government tries to do. So it's within their best interests to sort of release this stuff. And as the new generation step in, you know, 1947, it was a while ago. Pretty soon everyone's going to be dead who was a first-hand witness to Roswell. And as time goes on, eventually, you know, I think we're going to start seeing more of this stuff released.
Well, I hope you're right. We're talking to Preston Dennett, and you can check out his information. And for more on his books, go to PrestonDennett.com, or you can look up his brand new book, UFO Over New York, on Amazon.com or any great bookseller. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'll be back with more on... And welcome back to our final segment here on The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Remember, we'll be back again tomorrow night, Sunday night, with a brand new show. We're starting off with Marianne Winkowski, the real ghost whisperer. We're going to be talking about people's ghosts in their homes. And then we're going to be joined. Tim, this is kind of an interesting gentleman. We have Mr. Farkas is going to be joining us.
Pardon me?
He actually goes and he can help you clear your house of spirits from a remote place. Now, like Marianne Winkowski, he does not claim to be psychic or a medium, but he still has ability to communicate and kind of exercise your home. So we're going to delve into that tomorrow.
Does he do windows? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, not that kind of cleansing, Tim. You're going to have to still get your girl to do that for you, my friend.
Jeez.
We're talking to Preston Dennett. Again, please check out his website at PrestonDennett.com. That's D-E-N-N-E-T-T. PrestonDennett.com. If you have information and stories that you'd like to relate, you can always reach out to him at Prestone, P-R-E-S-T-O-N-E, at PAC.net. That's P-A-C.net. Is that correct?
PAC Bell.
I'm sorry. P-A-C-B-E-L-L.net. So again, that's Prestone at PACBell.net. wrapping up here, we've got about 9 minutes left with you, Preston. You know, I'd like to know, what, give me some more insights from you. You know, you just said that you think within our lifetime we may see the UFO from the Roswell Museum, you know, in a museum. We may start to see this stuff. Do you think it's safe to say within the next 50 years, 25 years, 10 years, what do you think is a timeline of more disclosure and the fact, when are they going to make themselves known on a global scale so there is no deniability? They're all over the place.
You know, I hate speculating about this stuff, but, you know, because there's been talk of disclosure ever since I got involved in this field 20-odd years ago. And so I don't know, but I do see an escalation of contact in terms of these waves of activity over...
Right, but I mean on a scale where it's not just 25 or 50 or 1,000 people that saw it, like the Phoenix Lights, you know, where there are multi-thousands. Right. But when is it going to be that they're, you know, like Independence Day, they're just going to show up in the sky over every major metropolitan city?
Well, you know, I interview a lot of people who are having these onboard experiences, and pretty much universally, they all feel that this will happen one day. They all feel that there's going to be massive flybys of UFOs that are going to be seen by everybody, and they're not going to go away, these ETs. And a lot of people, you know, 2012 is the date that's thrown around a lot. I don't know if that means anything. I hate specific dates and prophecies like that because there's a lot of those in the UFO literature that have never come true.
Right.
But it seems to me that, you know, for so many of these contactees and abductees to be saying the same thing, there's got to be something to it. And what bothers me is the UFOs, these ETs, if they're coming down in such large numbers, they could easily end this cover-up in an instant themselves. So they're part of it. You know, they're complicit in this cover-up. I think that they're smarter than to just suddenly reveal themselves to a society that is so racially prejudiced that we shoot at people who just think differently than us or have a different color of skin or, you know, a different religious belief.
Yeah, but then that means that they're working from a place of fear. And my guess is if they have laser technology and they can cross an expanse universe, you know, to come visit us, they're not worried about us and our little hillbilly rifles. You know,
well,
they can pretty much put us down in a minute.
No, they're not worried about us shooting them. They're worried about them coming down here, showing themselves, and us shooting ourselves, us just completely going hysterical. I think that's one of the main obstacles from open official contact, I really do. And this is actually what some abductees have been told. It's our own racial prejudices that it's keeping us from, you know, being contacted on a much wider basis. And there's a lot of evidence that UFOs are trying to raise people's awareness in these directions. The most common onboard UFO experience, when someone's taken on board, the most likely thing that's going to happen to them is being undressed and physically examined. But the second most likely thing is to be given messages about environmentalism, about nuclear proliferation, warnings against it, about a...
Yeah, but why take Joe Blow, Joe Public, and tell him, you know, we have to stop nuclear armament and we need to come together... Oh, I'm Joe Blow. I've got no power. Why don't you abduct Clinton? Why don't you abduct Obama? Why don't you abduct McCain? You know, why don't you abduct somebody who it's going to make an impact on so they can come back?
They absolutely do. They've abducted all sorts of people up and down the spectrum. You know, I've interviewed some, well, I know of, they wouldn't be interviewed, some very famous people, you know, who have had abduction experiences. They were involved in other incidences, and they don't want to talk. People who are in a position of power and celebrity and that sort of thing feel very sensitive about revealing this kind of information.
But then shouldn't the UFO or the aliens pick somebody? That's what I don't get is, you know, if they're picking people, they seem to not pick the right people. They pick people that are, you know, for a long time it was Billy Bob drinking a six-pack, you know, out in the back of his flatbed.
No, that's not true.
Well, that was the stories we used to hear, you know, growing up. It was always these, you know, rural people that had no education that they were reaching out to and that were seeing things.
I think that's part of the cover-up. The government is spending a lot of money, whoever is in control of the situation, to make UFO witnesses look bad. And every time someone sees a UFO, the Air Force steps in and says, it's seagulls. You were looking at birds or moths or earthquake lights or God knows what. You know, why they've come down really hard on people with physical evidence as well. And all the news stories are still tongue-in-cheek. They come out on the news, but it's still not being taken seriously. It's still being relegated to shows on TV with spooky music and strange green lighting, and I don't know, it's just not quite there yet where we need to be.
Where do you think we need to be that we're going to finally have this? Do you think it's got to be when war is stopped? I mean, then how's that going to happen in our lifetime?
Well, if you just look at how things are progressing, I mean, it's a more and more popular subject all the time. There are now college courses being taught about UFOs, and I think it's...
Right, but if they're waiting for us to kind of come to terms in peace, man is a violent, angry beast, and they do a lot of really stupid things, and they will for eternity. I just don't know if they're waiting for us to clean up our act. I just don't see how that's going to happen in our lifetime unless they come in and police it.
Right. Well, you may be right, but I think that they're working towards helping us clean up our act. And the thing is, we're in a really volatile situation right now, at least according to the not only the ETs, but also wherever you look for knowledge. Scientists or near-death experiencers are saying this, but Native American elders that we're going through major earth changes and global warming, and we're at the point of an environmentally very delicate situation involving a lot of upcoming disasters. So it's to our benefit to come together, and I think this is, you know, what we're going to see.
I've got about 2 minutes left here. From the people that have been abducted that you've interviewed, is there a common thread?
Well, there are common threads, several of them. A lot of these people who are being abducted do report having experiences early in childhood, and that's pretty much universal. They all have close-up UFO sightings. That's a common thread. Some of them are able to remember their onboard encounters without hypnosis. Some are not able to. And when someone's taken onboard a UFO, they often describe the same types of things. What I find interesting is a lot of people describe it as looking more like a dentist's office than a hospital room.
Right, but so many of us have heard these stories for so long that even, you know, if I'm going to have an imaginative experience, you know, I'm going to see, you know, the lights and the medical bed and the sterile white environment and the little guys with the big heads and the huge eyes and slits for mouths, because that's what we've all been, you know, conditioned to see. It's not like it's some big secret we've kept quiet and only people that have been abducted know these things, because the stories have been around for so long. Can't we be predisposed in a sense to a self-hypnosis, you know, hypnosis pattern that's what we think we're going to see when we do these regressions and,
yeah, well,
and
to a moments. Certain extent, because I think that you're right, but that is what we're seeing, so we're stuck with the stories. Well,
right.
And here's an example. There was one guy I interviewed. He's now a college professor. As a little boy, he was like 8, 9 years old, he was delivering papers, and a UFO came, swooped down right over him, struck him with a beam of light. Next thing he knows, it's daylight. He had missing time, right?
Right.
And afterwards, he was sick for the whole summer. He had some sort of radiation sickness. He was very weak. He could not get up. He had trouble eating. And he eventually recovered.
And now that little boy is Donald Trump. No.
But at any rate, years later, he, you know, thought about going under hypnosis. Didn't really want to do it because he had read and heard about abduction and kind of expected that he was going to get the typical story. And, you know, he went to a hypnotist who warned him the same thing. He says, well, if you've read UFO books, you know, I can't promise you that what you're going to remember isn't something you made up. So he underwent hypnosis, and he remembered a very largely typical onboard UFO experience,
right,
where he was laid out and examined, but the beings did not look like what he expected. They had like a yellowish skin, and the eyes were different, and everything about them was a little bit different than how he expected. And
well, that's interesting. So there are some variations. Well,
yeah.
Preston, thank you very much for spending your time with us here this evening, and we appreciate you sharing, and I hope everybody will check out your books, UFO Over New York. It is available at all good booksellers right now. We want to thank you all for joining us here in the darkness. We'll be back again tomorrow night, and we do hope that you'll join us. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show on...